The previous Mishnah taught that if somebody accepts upon himself, he makes a vow to donate the value of himself or of a different person, and he wants to donate the market value, not the Erech, which is a fixed value given by the Torah based on his age group and gender, but rather he makes a vow to give the real market value of himself or of a different person. The amount that he has to give is the value which he is worth at the time that the evaluation is going to be made by Beis Din later on. And if the value of the subject of the vow changes before then the amount he is going to give is totally based on the time of the evaluation. As such, if the subject of the vow dies before the evaluation takes place, then the person who made the vow would be totally exempt. Because a person is never sold as a slave once he's died, and a person's market value is based on how much he would be sold as a slave. So in a case where the subject of the vow dies before the evaluation takes place, then the person who made the vow is totally exempt. This Mishnah is going to show that this is not always the case, and regarding animals or different items, as opposed to people, even if the item is destroyed or the animal dies, he would still be obligated, as the Mishnah will now explain. If somebody declares, shows their oila, this ox is going to be considered a korban oila, a type of sacrifice, he's pointing to a specific item and he's saying that this is now designated towards the Beis HaMikdash. Or he says, bayis ze korban, this house should be a korban, literally. Okay, it doesn't mean a sacrifice, it just means that it's going to be hekdash, it's going to be designated to the Beis HaMikdash. Meis hasher v'nafla bayis, if the ox dies or the house falls down, ein chayv l'shalem, he is not obligated to pay the value that the ox or the house were worth, since the language of his designation does not suggest a vow that he is placing an obligation upon himself. Rather, the entire extent of his vow includes only this specific item. As long as it still exists, this is going to be designated towards the Beis HaMikdash, but the moment that it doesn't exist, he didn't obligate himself to pay the value of that item and to replace it. Only if he says, Demei shor zeh olai oila, the value of this ox, I am accepting upon myself as a korban oila, that it should be a particular sacrifice, or Demei bayis zeh olai korban, or he says, I am accepting upon myself to give the value of this house as a towards the Beis HaMikdash, by adding the word demei, he's talking about the value of the item, and also by adding the word olai, that he's talking about placing an obligation upon himself, which extends beyond that particular item which is in front of him. By adding those two phrases together, the intention of that person is understood to include an acceptance to even replace the item if it gets lost, and therefore, Meis Hasher V'Nafla Bayis, if the ox dies or the house falls down, then his obligation does not end, and now he would be obligated to replace it with money. Chayim L'Shalim is obligated to pay the value of those items towards the Beis HaMikdash. Now, why exactly is this different to the previous Mishnah? In the previous Mishnah, the person also accepted upon himself to give the value of a person. But we said that if the person dies before the evaluation takes place, then he's totally exempt, because he only needs to give the value of the person which he is what he is worth at the time of the evaluation. So why don't we say the same thing over here, that since the evaluation didn't yet take place, he only needs to pay the value of a dead ox, or of a house which fell down, which probably isn't worth anything, or is worth something very small. And the answer is based on the understanding of what he accepted upon himself. It could be that an evaluation is far more necessary and difficult to do for a person than items. And therefore, the obvious understanding of somebody who accepts upon himself to give the value of a human being is that he's going to give the value at the time of the evaluation. Whereas if somebody accepts upon himself to give the value of his ox, it's much easier to know what the value of the ox is. And therefore, there's no need to interpret that which he said, that he's going to base it on the value of a later on time, at the time of the evaluation, but rather that simply he intends to donate the value of what it is worth right now. Be as it may, for whatever reason, this is all based on the language that the person used in his vow to understand what exactly he was including in that which he accepted upon himself. Mishnah Vov. Although at the root of things, a obligation to bring a korban has nothing to do with monetary law, and it's really like a mitzvah which a person needs to fulfill. Nevertheless, once he has an obligation to bring a korban, that also turns into a monetary obligation towards the Beis HaMikdash. There is a treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash who is responsible over the monetary side of things, and he has the power, just like any person who has a monetary domain, and he can make monetary claims in Beis Din, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash has the power to take a security, to take an item from somebody who owes a korban in order that he pay up the korban. Just like if somebody owes another person money, the person who is owed the money is able to take a mashkain, to take security from the other person, which means that he takes a item and he says, I'm going to keep it until you pay me. This is one of the monetary rights which anyone who is owed money has. And the same applies to the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore Chayovei Arochim, those who are obligated to pay up their vows which they have made, be it an Erech vow or even other vows to give the market value, whatever it may be, Mamashkenin Oison, we take a mashkin from them, a particular item which the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash can keep. He can't use it, but he can keep it in order to convince the person and to pressure him into paying up that which he owes the Beis HaMikdash. However, Chayovei Chatos v'Ashamos, those people who are obligated to bring a korban chatos or a korban osham in order to atone for a particular sin that they committed, Einu Mashkin Oison, we don't take an item from them in order to pressure them into paying the korban, to bringing the korban, because they need to bring this as an atonement for themselves. There's no need to pressure them into doing it, because people want to achieve an atonement for their sins. And therefore there is no need to take a item from them in order to pressure them into bringing the korban. That having been said, Chayovei Oilos Shalomim, those who are obligated to bring a korban oila or a korban shalomim, which are usually bought as voluntary obligations, voluntary korbanos, but however, once a person accepts upon himself to bring such a korban, or he designates an animal to be such a korban, he's now obligated to bring it. It's true that at the beginning it was voluntary, but once he accepts it upon himself, he's now obligated to bring that korban. And therefore, Mamashkenin Oison, we would take an item from him in order to pressure him into paying up the korban. And these korbanos, these sacrifices, don't come to atone for sins, and therefore he does need pressurizing to bring that korban. Now the truth is there are certain types of korbanos oila which are brought to atone for somebody who didn't perform a particular mitzvah that he was supposed to perform. However, since this is not an absolute obligation, there is still room to be concerned that the person won't bring the korban, and therefore he does need the pressurizing. And the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash would use his monetary right to take a mashkain, to take an item from him, in order that he'll bring the korban, just like anyone who is owed money can take such an item in order to pressurize the person into paying up the debt. Now the Mishnah adds on, Afal pisha ein miskapel ad sheyes ratzeh, even though a korban does not achieve any atonement, the truth is the Mishnah doesn't literally mean an atonement, the Mishnah means that a korban is not accepted as something favorable in front of Hashem, ad sheyes ratzeh, unless the person bringing it does so of his own volition, and he brings the korban because he intends to, as opposed to being forced to. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, l'rtzoinoi, that one needs to bring a korban with his own will, as opposed to being forced to do so. The Mishnah says, nevertheless, koifin oisoi, we do force him to bring the korban, but achiyoma rotzani, until he says that I want to bring the korban. We can't force him all the way, but we force him into saying that I want to bring the korban. And then when he brings the korban, even though it appears to be quite obvious to the onlookers that he's only doing it because he was forced to do so, but this would still be considered that he's doing it of his own volition. And the Mishnah brings a similar example, v'chein ha-to'omer begitin noshim. And similarly, you would say the same thing with regards to a get, which is given to a woman. The law is that a woman can be divorced only if her husband gives her a get willingly. So it doesn't help to force the person to give his wife a get. However, if the Beis Din see that a woman needs a get and the husband is refusing to divorce her, there too, koifin oisoi achi yomerotzani, we would force him to give the get until he says, I want to give the get. And then he would give it, and even though it appears to be that he's being forced to do so, this is considered to be done willingly. And the Rambam famously explains the idea behind this, that every Jew, deep down, wants to do that which he is supposed to do according to the Torah, that which Hashem wants him to do, that which the Chachomim, the leaders of the generation, want him to do. And so as soon as he even says that I want to do it, even if we forced him to get to that position where he says that, nevertheless, that statement, that declaration that he's saying that I want to do this, is something which emanates from a deep part of himself, that inner desire that he really does want to do that which the Torah commands. And so too with regards to the Korbanos, this is considered to be a Korban which is brought willingly. Perek Vav Mishnah Aleph, this Perek continues to discuss details of designations and vows to give something towards the Beis HaMikdash, and general laws regarding Hekdash property, that which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. And the first statement of the Mishnah is actually related to something else. The Mishnah will compare this to something which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Although in general the law is that if somebody is owed money by a particular person, and let's say Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, and then Reuven died without yet paying back the debt, Shimon is not allowed to collect the debt from Reuven's children, who inherit him, as long as his children are still under the age of Bar Mitzvah. Only once they are adults and they have a sufficient level of understanding to answer to his claims in Beis Din is he able to claim money from them. However, there are certain scenarios where Shimon would be able to collect even from Reuven's children who are under the age of Bar Mitzvah. For example, if Reuven, just before he died, declared that he has not yet paid back the debt, in that case, Shimon certainly would be able to collect the debt even from his young children. Now, he would collect the debt from the property, from the land, which Reuven leaves behind. It's that sort of property which still is left bound to paying up this debt, the non-movable property like land. And in order for him to collect the debt from this land, they would sell the land, and the money which they would get from the sale of the land would go towards paying up this debt. So the Mishnah says, Shum ha'yisoymim, the evaluation, and really this refers to the bidding and the auctioning of the orphan's property, which they inherited, in order to sell it so that they can pay the debt to the person who they owe money to, Shloshim Yoim needs to last for 30 days, in order that they try and get a higher price for the field. For Shum ha'hekdesh, and the evaluation and the auctioning of Hekdash property, that which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, if somebody designates a piece of land to the Beis HaMikdash, the way that the Beis HaMikdash treasurer is going to be able to use that land is by selling it, and then he'll have money to buy the needs of the Beis HaMikdash. So Shishim Yoim, this needs to last for 60 days, so that we make sure that the Beis HaMikdash ends up gaining the most amount of money possible, that people would bid for this piece of land. Umachrizin baboker v'erev, and they would announce this piece of land that is being sold and people are able to bid for it in the morning and in the evening for 30 or 60 days respectively. The Gemara explains that this way a person who has workers, when he hears this announcement, he can tell his workers that on the way back from work in the evening, they should go past this piece of land and see how much it's worth, where the bid has reached currently. And the next morning, when he hears the announcement again, he will be reminded to ask his workers what they saw last night and how much the details of the bidding. It should be noted, by the way, that even though the Mishnah talked about an example of evaluating and auctioning off the property of orphans, the same really applies to any time that the Beis Din would be selling a piece of land for the sake of somebody who is owed money. For example, if a woman is coming to collect the money which she is owed from the Kasuba is a document written at the time of marriage which gives the woman a particular right to a particular amount of money upon being divorced or widowed. So if she is collecting money, for example, from the inheritance, if her husband died, the same would apply. The Mishnah uses the one particular example, but the same would apply to any auctioning that the Beis Din does, except for Hekdash, that Hekdash would require 60 days, whereas everything else would require 30 days of auctioning. Continues the Mishnah. Magdish Nechosov, one who declares his property to be the property of the Beis HaMikdash, he designates it towards the Beis HaMikdash, But v'chayisalav k'suas isha, he already owed a kasuba to his wife. Somebody already has a right, a monetary right, to part of his property. And meanwhile, he declared all of his property to go towards the Beis HaMikdash. Since her debt preceded this declaration and designation towards the Beis HaMikdash, she has the right to collect that property, and it would belong to her, not the Beis HaMikdash. Now, although in general the woman only receives her kasuba once she is divorced or widowed, technically speaking, the right that she has to collect the kasuba exists even beforehand. And if she wants to, she is able to collect the kasuba even while she is still married. Now, there is a concern that a person might have declared his property to go to the Beis HaMikdash, and after that he realizes that actually he's quite short on money and he wants that land back. He regrets giving it over to the Beis HaMikdash. We're concerned that he might have a sort of plot with his wife, and they'll make a deal. He'll say that I'm going to divorce you now, so that you'll be able to collect the kasuba from the land which I designated to the Beis HaMikdash. While she's still married, although her monetary right began, she's not allowed to just collect the kasuba in all scenarios, and he would need to divorce her in order for her to be able to collect that kasuba from the Beis HaMikdash. So he says to her, I'm going to divorce you. You are going to have the right, based on your kasuba, to collect that money which I gave over to the Beis HaMikdash. So you collect that, and then I'm going to remarry you. And that way we'll be reunited with our piece of land, and we'll have taken it back from the Beis HaMikdash without having to pay anything. So in order that he does not do this, and we don't allow the property to leave the possession of the Beis HaMikdash for nothing, Rabbi Eliezer says, "Kasheyagar Shena," when he divorces her, "Yadu Hanoa," he needs to make a vow not to have any benefit from her furthermore, which would mean that he wouldn't be able to remarry her. And they say we would make sure that he's not divorcing her only in order to reclaim that piece of land. However, Rabbi Yeshua says, "Enutzarech," he does not need to do this because according to Rabbi Yeshua, we are not concerned that somebody would make such a plot in order to cause loss to the Beis HaMikdash. Towards another person, like the Mishnah is going to bring an example now, it could be that such a concern does exist, but in order to cause a loss to the Beis HaMikdash, we don't suspect people of doing such a thing. Now, Kayetzevoy Omar Ben Shimon Gamliel, similar to this idea, Ben Shimon Ben Gamliel said that even somebody who is a guarantor for a woman's kasuba, which means that he accepted upon himself that if a particular man won't be able to pay up the kasuba to his wife, then he is a guarantor, he will pay it instead of him. So if it comes to it that the husband divorces her and he has no money, so the guarantor would be obligated to pay her the money. In that case, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, and Rabbi Yeshua would agree over here, that if the husband was divorcing her, the Yadir Hana'a, he would need to make a vow not to have any further benefit from her, so that he would not be able to remarry her, because we have the same concern over here. Perhaps he will have a plot against the guarantor's property in order to obtain his possessions, that he would need to give his wife the amount of the kasuba, and then he'll immediately remarry his wife, and that way they just manage to get money from this person in an unfair way, because they never really planned on getting divorced. They only did it in order to get that money from him. And Rabbi Yeshua would agree in this case that there is a concern that such a person would have a plot with his wife, because Rabbi Yeshua's whole reason was that we don't suspect that he's going to do so against the Beis HaMikdash's property. But if it's against another individual, then even Rabbi Yeshua is concerned, and therefore he would require that the husband make a vow not to have any further benefit from her, so that he wouldn't be able to remarry her, and we would make sure that that is not the reason why they are divorcing. Mishnah Beis, although we learned in the previous Mishnah that if somebody declares his possessions and his property to belong to the Beis HaMikdash, but he had previously already owed money to somebody else, then the debtor, the one who is owed money, has the right to go and take that money, even once it has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash. He can take that property for himself, because his right preceded that designation to the Beis HaMikdash. That having been said, the Mishnah now teaches that HaMakdash Nechasov, if somebody declares his property to belong to the Beis HaMikdash, Vaisalav Kasubas Isha, but he already owed a kasuba, a certain amount of money to his wife, Uval Chayv, or he owed money to somebody who had lent him money, or was owed money by him for a different reason, the woman is not able to collect the amount of money which her kasuba gives her a right to, from the property which he gave to Hekdesh, to the Beis HaMikdash, and the other person who is owed money, for example, the lender, cannot collect his debt from the property which had been designated to the Beis HaMikdash, unless they redeem it. And in general, in order to redeem property which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, one has to pay the actual value of that property. Now, in this case, they definitely don't have to pay the actual value, otherwise they don't gain anything. But they have to pay at least a tiny amount in order to redeem it, because otherwise there's a concern that people might think that there's no such concept of redeeming Hekdesh. That even once something has been designated to the Beis HaMikdash, one is able to take it and use it. So in order to avoid people coming to that wrong conclusion, but rather the one who redeems it, if let's say there's somebody who wants to redeem the Hekdesh property anyway, and that property is worth more than the amount of debts which the person owed. For example, let's say it's worth 500 zuz, and the total amount of the debts is 300 zuz. The one who redeems it should redeem it, and the amount that he has to pay should take into account the fact that he's going to give the other debts, the kasuba towards the woman, and the other debt towards the lender. And so he would only need to pay 200 zuz in order to redeem it. And over here there's no concern that people will think that Hekdesh can stop belonging to the Beis HaMikdash without redemption, because he is redeeming it, he's paying 200 zuz. He's just not paying the full value, but that already won't lead people to reach wrong conclusions. Now, what happens if Hekdesh Tishimone, if the husband or the person who owed money, he designated a piece of land which was worth 90 moneh to the Beis HaMikdash, and he owed 100 moneh as debts. Over here, we do like we said beforehand, that Moisif Oy Dinar, the one who is owed money, adds on one dinar, meaning he is able to borrow one more dinar, that's a very small amount of money, from the person who owes him money, and using that dinar, he would redeem this property, which is worth much more than one dinar, but at least he is redeeming it, and he's going through that process, which would avoid people concluding that there's no need to do any redemption. And he redeems it, in order to give the woman her kasuba money, and to the person who is owed money, to give him his debt.